The undiscovered black country, the folks don't seem to know. The undiscovered black country, where everyone should go. People walk or cycle round, they pass the time of day. The undiscovered black country, as places tucked away.
If you're listening to the podcasts on the website, you'd have listened to the infant school and the junior school at Causeway Green. Well, after that, I were lucky enough to pass something called the 11 Plus. The young uns might not know it, but the older ones amongst you will know the 11 Plus. And I went to the grammar school, the Albury Grammar School, which I then any longer. There's a monstrosity of an academy there with orange walls and stuff like that. And this was the most beautiful building with a big sort of tower and the Cresco sign above the big doer. And it was in a quadrant before they built the Chemi Labs, which were there like while I was there. Everything really centred around this quadrant. It was just a big long square, and then there were corridors going down into the middle bit, and there was a bit right in the middle. I think that was domestic science and art labs and library in the middle. But it was this wondrous place up Moat Road, opposite Barnford Park. I said, really, in the other two, there was always either my cousins or my brother had followed before me, so you never were succumbed to any of the bullying as such. And the grammar school was a massive cultural change for me, in a way. And really, I was quite lucky, because the couple of years before, it was very, very old school. And I've got the book written by Mr. Plant, who was the history teacher, on the history of it. And it started off in Albury, many, many years at Foa, and then they built this one up, I think in the 1920s, up in Moat Road. And there were like fee-paying students that used to go there. And if I think they allowed a certain amount on places to poor folk, like we, I suppose. But it changed, and they had things like, you had prefects like you did to other schools, but prefects were allocated like first formers who just started, and these first formers were like the servants, really. And you could believe it, it was like Dickens. And it only changed a couple of years before I started. I think our kid was like that. And these sixth formers could rule the roost, you know. They could make you go back at the end of school and do stuff for them and things like that. Anyway, I got into the grammar school, and a few things happened, really. I mean, again, it had gone afore me that I was a pretty good footballer, and they had, in the summer before you started, they had like the trials for the teams, and it wore our team. It was like the under 13, so I'd be 11. It was the under 13s, the under 15s, and the first 11, which was the under 18s. And our kid, Dave, really played much football, but he went with me anyway to the trial, so I'd sort of met all the blokes from his year, before I even started, and formed, for one reason or another, really good friendships with them. There was Jeff Tibbetts and Boxer and Chile and people like that. So I sort of knowed my way around the school before we started, really. We had to go and get our uniforms. I remember we got our uniforms, and I'll get onto it a bit later on, but yeah. You could only get them, I think, from Oakes's in Rudend, or I think it was Adley's in Albury, and you used to have to go in, and they had like a winter blazer, which was a black blazer with a badge on, and or you had a summer blazer, which was green, blue and white stripes, you know, like you see at Henley Regatta and places like that. This was green, blue and white stripes, and we had a cap, And then you had to wear, obviously wear your school tie, you had to wear black trousers and black shoes and all that. But the wenches, they had two uniforms, really. They had the blazer and this beautiful aqua summer skirt, like frock. And then in the winter, they had like a dark blue, but they looked lovely. And then in the summer, they had a bouter. Or we could wear a bouter if we wanted, but it was a bit like when she wore it. And in the winter, they had sort of this billycock hat, really. Like a pork pie hat it was, with the ribbon round. It was lovely. Any road up, we started. And in the first year, you wore sort of streamed as such. You each went in your groups. And then I think it was either after the first term, you did these little tests, and then they put you in A stream, B stream, or C stream. Well, I were lucky enough to get in the A stream. I don't know why I got in the A stream. But it was always, again, sort of because you were good at sport, you almost were put on a pedestal, really. And sometimes it did cause a bit of friction between teachers. Not necessarily in that first year, but I remember in the second year, I had trials with the first 11, which were the under 18, so I'd be 13, and 12, 13, and they'd be 18. And I got in, the first 11, 13, 14, and they played grammar school. They really play anybody from our region, from the Black Country, as such. They'd only play other grammar schools or other technical schools. So round our road, we'd play Rowley Grammar, Ollie Lodge Grammar, and then Albury Tech, and we wouldn't play anybody else. We'd play like Bromsgrove High School, Litchfield High School, them sort of things. So it was a bit snotty in a way, I suppose, that your day sort of play the Albrights and your day play St Mickey's and that. And that was something that, you know, I found difficult because some of your mates would be at Albrights and be in St Mickey's, and of course you'd be called a grammar grub. You had to get over that. You know, you had to tell him you hadn't changed or anything. It was just that you went to a different school than them. So it took a while to get used to that. Also, it took quite a while to get used to the fact that there were posh folks there. And by I hate saying the word posh, it's terrible. But they spoke the same as you. And they used to call with the council boys. There were lads from probably Worley, around Worley Woods, maybe Lordswood, that sort of area, Arbornish, who'd come to our grammar school. And they did look down on you. They did say, oh, I'm from the council estate. And because we hadn't got any money, here's where one of the things that sort of, I suppose, a learning process in life, because we hadn't got any money, you used to be allocated off the social, I presume, or off at the skill fund, I don't know, a provident check, so you could go and pay for your stuff on this provident check. And our day realised what a provident check is, but they used to shout, which I think now is wrong, they used to shout your names out. There were only me, but there were a few of we off the estate. They shout your names out in the assembly when your provident check was ready, and then you'd have to go and wait outside the headmaster's office for him to give you the provident check, and you signed for it. And very often you'd get these kids coming by and they'd say, oh, here they are, the council boys, got no money, poor as hell. Well, I thought that we were rich because we had a check, we played with a checkbook at Adley's or Oaks's. And I said, a couple of times it did really sink in at first, and I like brushed it off. But then I thought, there's something wrong, I right here. And so I come home one day and my dad was there, he had done an afternoon shift or something, and I said, Dad, we poor. And he went, in what way, son? Now, I found that working class folks are incredibly wise, worldly wise, you know, got loads of common sense, and folks that are a bit more educated, for want of a sense, can be incredibly clever in one sense, but they ain't got a bit of iapath of common sense in them, and I find that generally through life, really. But anyway, I said to my dad, am we poor in what sense? And I said, well, I can't understand why these folks say that we're poor when I'm standing to get the cheque for when we can go and pay for our clothes. because, you know, I thought only rich folks had cheques. So then he sat down with me and explained what the Provident cheque was, how he paid weekly. And, you know, it was just something to save you shelling it all out at once, which he couldn't afford for the uniforms. Because way, way back, my Uncle Ted was the first of our family, this is year and years ago, to get through the 11 plus for the grammar school. But because me Nana Murray and Grandad Murray didn't have enough money, he had to go to work when he was 14. But then my Uncle Eric, who was 20 years younger, he was the youngest of the family. When it was his time and he qualified, his brothers and his sisters were all at work, so they could afford his uniform between them. So that's weird, eh? It's like a bit spooky, that is. But anyway, he wrote up. He sat and he explained and he said, look, it's the way life is. You know, some people have got more money than the others, but it don't make them any better than you. And if they think that way and if they say things like that to you, then it's their loss. It ain't your loss. It's their loss because they don't understand the world. And that was a really, you know, a really poignant lesson to me in life, that you don't judge anybody. You know, you might have somebody who's got two apnees to rub together, but them the salt on the earth. And you might have others that, you know, multimillionaires, but they are happy in a way. You know, because money don't bring everything. So that was like a learning process. And there was a lot of learning to do in grammar school, because you understood that you were from this community. They only spake that one road, or only did things that one road. And folks have got cars and they got tellies and they lived in big homes and they rent the properties and stuff like that. And it widened your scope. And in some way, you started to educate your parents. Because very often we'd say to our dad, you know, why? Because you'd get your council house, it's a good price. Why don't you buy your council house? And my dad would say, and it's only when you get older and you think back, and my dad would say to me, folks like we don't buy our houses, son. As though, and you'd take it then, but when you got older, you just thought he understood his place in life in a way. And he had no aspirations, whereas we was a generation that they wanted us to better ourselves. Our parents wanted us to better ourselves. It was almost like that was the transition period for we. And the grammar school was a big, big learning process, really, in terms of life and where you placed yourself in life. And we don't really have to, I mean, you know, we don't speak as broad as I speak now, because I got to a certain age and thought, well, what does it blooming matter, really? How you spike, you know, if somebody called take you as your hand, when they don't take you at all, it's their loss, eh? But we had no real pressure, I suppose, the way it'd be, off the teachers. It would be more off other kids trying to take the mick out of you. And then you'd talk even broader, so it was almost like you had this secret language that you'd spike that they don't understand anyway. But in a way, you know, you broke down barriers and all folks from different, you know, religions and races, and that all come together, and it was almost like a broth where you learnt about life, grammar school. And the teachers were just wonderful. I mean, to name a few, our biology teacher, Mr. Sant, everybody loved Mr. Sant, and he was a really, really interesting bloke. And you could go at dinner time after you'd had your dinner. You could go and sit in his back room in his laboratory, and he'd tell you he'd got all these specimens, like he got toads and stuff. He'd even got a baby, like a fetus, and he used to tell you how he'd go to Rome every year because he studied bees, and he'd tell you all this intricate stuff about bees. And the pupils would just sat there all dinner time and like sponge it in, all this stuff this bloke told you. And then there was the cases of Mr. Laycock, who'd been in the RAF. He was a geography teacher, and he would just fill your head with war stories and stuff like that. It's such an interesting bloke. Miss Tweedy, who was the deputy headmistress, and her always wore tweed things, and smoked these black Turkish cigarettes that you could smell a mile off. And Ishwin Davis, there was two Welsh blokes. There was Ishwin Davis, who was our maths teacher. There was a bit like something out the Hobbit, really, because he was only tiny. And he wore caps on his shoes so that he'd clink him coming down the corridor. And all of the teachers, wenches and the blokes, particularly when we started, would wear the gowns and the mortarboards. So you could smell him coming down, because he was another and he'd smoke these Turkish cigarettes. And the front of his head and his eyebrows was yellow from the nicotine. But he was so small, he used to teach maths, he was so small that he couldn't get to the top of the board. Now, you know, they have these whiteboards now, but these you had chalk and thingies. And he'd have to have this little platform that he'd stand up. If he was doing algebra or trigonometry equations and it was the top of the board, he used to have to stand on them to get there. It's fabulous. But there was him and Mr. Davis. And I was saying, when I got in the first 11, they used to play Saturday mornings, and then they used to play Wednesday afternoons. Well, Wednesday afternoons was normally, not every week, but Wednesday afternoons was always double maths. Well, Mr. Davis, who was the games master, who was also Welsh, used to have to give me a letter to exempt me from double maths on a Wednesday when the first 11 had got a game. And Ishwin had got bar me about, you know, yeah, there's no way I'm going to pass your GCE. You're never here at your lessons. You don't know what I'm doing. And I had to get my mate, Chrissy Aikert, to teach me maths, really, because I missed so many games playing football that I had to get him to like go through everything, or otherwise I'd have never known. I mean, I've never used algebra nor trigonometry, but I'd have never known what were going on. But Ishwin used, they always used to have a discussion in the corridor, I can see him. And that was when he was tiny, and Mr. Davis, the games master, was tiny, but he had a shock of blonde hair. And it was ever so weird because he limped. Because he'd done, he was a very, very good gymnast. Don't know nothing about football, he was another one. It was left to people like Jeff Tibbetts, who was the captain of the first 11, to give us our tactics and stuff like that. Because Mr. Davis didn't know anything, but he was a great athlete, or was a great athlete and a great gymnast, but he limped. Because the story was, he was doing a gait vault, and if anybody knows what a gait vault, it's over one of them osses, them gym osses. And he turned in the air and he were coming down, and somebody had come underneath him, one of the pupils, and as he twisted, he did something to his hip or something, and it was never right, so he limped all the time. And I can always remember he smoked a pipe all the time. All the time he were talking to you, he'd smoke a pipe and it would go out and he'd light it, and he'd go out and he'd light it and he'd go out. And it was just, I don't know how I can describe, the grammar school was a magical place. You know, it had a massive, great big hall where you had to go every morning. And I think it was a 60-piece piped organ that they used to play every morning. And you had to go through assembly and you had to sing the school song. And I guarantee you, if there's anybody out there who ever listens to this, who went to the grammar school, they would know the school song. And I'm going to sing a bit in it for you, because if anybody says to me, do you go to the grammar school hour? And I always say, can you remember the school song? And we'd just be in the streets and we're singing it. And it was written by somebody called Davis in the 1920s. And it's just a rallying call. Mid ceaseless toil and the swelling smoke, where the mighty furnace glows, through night skies of bears, through the mech and the A's, the Albury School arose. Eh? Sons and the daughters all have proclaimed a dual meed of renown. For some the hero's crown, for some the martyr's crown. So hurrah for the old boys of Albury, who have built up the name of a school. We must play the game, we must do the same, until all bear the fair name of Albury. Though the strife of life may be swift and clean, though we might find hard knocks to rule, heed not the praise or game, carry on and play the game, for we are boys, or wenches, of Albury School. It's a bit sad, ain't really, that I know that. But I just love that song. And I got so much pride in that school. There was just something special about it. And you'd have things like, you'd have inter-house competitions. There'd be like athletics or cricket or hockey or football. Oh my God, football. They were like wars. They'd be, your mates would be in a different house, like King's or Queen's Trinity and school. And you'd be playing them, and they'd kick £7 of S out on you. And to get this trophy, it'd be like House Kings. And then you'd have the same in plays, and you'd have debates. And you, there was always something. You'd have the school orchestra. Johnny Heacock, our Latin teacher. Johnny Heacock was this big, like Billy Bunter, bloke who taught you Latin. Played trombone, played jazz trombone. He was absolutely brilliant at it. But he'd walk around and he'd say, conjugate the verb amartis. So you'd get amartis, amartis, amant, amani, amant. And then if you'd got it wrong, you could feel him at the back of you and he'd hit your head with his knuckle. And he'd ring. I mean, my mother hit me with a boiler stick. And I tell you what, his knuckle was harder than the blooming boiler stick. But he was completely and utterly fair. They take no messing off nobody. Treated you with respect, even you as a bab. But if you stepped out of line, really disciplined you. And there were many like that. They were very, very hard. I mean, folks go on about how they used to belt us and stuff like that. They belted you if you deserved to be belted, as far as I'm concerned. You know, if you played up, and there were some who played up, then they belted you, and it was as simple as that. And if you deserved it, you deserved it. But there was things going on. You did have bullies. There was like the mafioso, Tommy Adley, and Keith White, and I can't remember the other one, Tommy Fellers. And because I think they were in King's House, because I knowed them, I was a lot younger, I never had any problem. But they could go around like game folks to game the Jammy Dodgers and stuff from the Tuck Shop and things like that. So, you know, it was there. It was an underlying thing there, but it was just part and parcel of growing up. Keith White, by the way, become the All-England Grammar School high jump champion, and I think he broke the record. And we used to go and watch him at the dinner time practising up on the field into the sun pit. And I think he was one of the very few who did the straddle. He perfected the straddle, and he was great to watch him. Great, absolutely great to watch him. And, you know, there's some of them are still about, and I still keep in touch with them. But as I said, being a sportsman, you sort of got away with murder. And I just loved football, and really that stemmed me to go and play in professional football, because I didn't realise it, but the scouts were coming to watch me when we played. And I was lucky enough to play county football and regional football and go to big tournaments. There was a massive All-England Grammar Schools tournament down at Bognor Regis. I remember that quite well. And I were only 14, I think, when I played at this tournament. And I can remember the one game, really, and it was against South London, and we played. And we all come off the pitch, and they were all on the couch, and I got on the couch, and all of the players clapped me because I had such a good game, and that sticks in my mind forever and ever. And you had come back to grammar school, and the headmaster had called you up onto the stage, and there'd be, you know, there'd be Lee Evan and there'd be Jeff Tibbetts, there'd be Chile, me, and he'd say how proud he was of your lads. The lads for the school, how they carried themselves and behaved themselves. And you knew, you know, you were lads, but you knowed you were carrying the crest of the school, the oak tree crest, when you went, and you behaved yourself and you made sure you was respectful and you never got in trouble. And that was, you know, that was again a grounding. You don't realise it, but it was a grounding in how it shaped you as a person. And I was so upset when I knew that the grammar school would be no more. And I went back and did a couple of sessions with some of the pupils when it was Langley High and then it was somewhere else. And the one time I noticed that there was like yellow tape across the toilets, the girls' toilets. And I said to the caretaker, what's this about? And he says, you wouldn't believe it. He says, I've sent them over to the toilets of Barnford Park because the wenches in this school had ripped the toilets out of the floor And I said, well, I can't believe it's the same place. You know, there was desks that was screwed down to the floor, and there was mesh over the windows and stuff like that. It just wore the same place, the spirit of that school. And it had a beautiful, beautiful stained glass window that I think Terry Daniels, Dr. Terry Daniels, who's a historian, Albury, got up this campaign and they saved it. And I think it went to the Albury Academy in Pound Road. I don't know if they used it anywhere. And I don't know if the organ, the big organ, was brought by anybody, because as I heard, it was going to be taken apart because nobody wanted it. And the flower in the hall, Mr. Sands, I think, or Mr. Sanderson, was a caretaker. And you'd see him chucking the sand on it and brushing it with his brush every day, every morning of our assembly. And it was a beautiful, like, parquet floor. Now, that, I would imagine, would have been ticked up and used somewhere, because it was such a beautiful, beautiful floor it was. And, yeah, so many happy memories of the grammar school, really, just going through. And I know, when I look back, that I was sort of privileged because I was good at sports. And you know you are. And there were kids that probably hated every minute that they was there. But to me, it was such a special... They were all special places. They were like a progression from one to the other. And it was just the way that by the time I left, I did my GCSEs and I'd been signed in for Swindon Town. By the time I left at 16, everything that I'd learned from when I was five was inbred in me. And I think that's part of the way that I was shaped as a person, and I think that's part of the way what the pull of the Black Country all the time and away playing football was so special to me that I'd come home and I'd go and watch the grammar school Cresconians play, the old Cresconians play, you know, just to feel part of, you know, of that era, of that, you know, of that time when I was there. A very, very special time. So proud. I've got a cap. Still, I've got my blazer somewhere. Obviously, it don't fit me now. But I've got a cap with a crest on. And now and again, I just burst into the school song because I love it so much. And I hope everybody else out there loves it. And then there's hundreds and hundreds of other stories, you know, about the grammar school, about the desks. When we first started, we were using, you'd have ink in a little cup, stick it in this little recess in the desk, and you'd have one of them quills to practice your writing with, and then you couldn't use biros, you had to use a proper fountain pen. It was amazing. That's why I call it write proper, eh, really. Anyway, I've took you through infant school, junior school, now senior school. I'm sure something else will come up and we'll feed you with that one in another podcast. But I hope you've enjoyed it.
The undiscovered Black Country, the folks don't seem to know. The undiscovered Black Country, where everyone should go. People walk or cycle round, they pass the time of day. The undiscovered Black Country has places tucked away.